This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 446, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
What, are you in a hurry?
Hey everybody, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 446. My name is Paul Montgomery. Joining me, Josh Flanagan.
Hey.
And special guest, Ellie Coluccio, because Connor's off at San Diego.
Hey, Ellie. Red Batman, I'm a little bit tipsy. I think I'm okay to be Connor this episode.
That's okay, good.
That's all, that you basically distilled his essence.
I just have some
Red
H2O,
Batman,
so.
A little bit tipsy.
We are iFanboy, and we like comics, and every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us picks the best book that they read this week. We call that the pick of the week, and we talk about it on this year's podcast, along with other books, terrible things that happened, and pigeonholing Connor. Before we get to the show, quick reminder slash warning, this is a review show, and we'll be talking about all the things that happen in this week's books. So if you're worried about spoilers, pause the show. Come back when you're ready to join us. This week, Jet Set Josh had the pick.
Yeah, and I think that I owe my good friend Paul Montgomery a thank you, because if he had not said, hey, dipshit, make sure to read Ragnarok number one from IDW Comics, which let's just be honest, it's just Walter Simonson doing brand new Norse god stories.
Yeah, with Connor not being around, I had to be the mom this week. So
yeah, so I need these. These
I was like,
I
make sure you read this. You're going to like it.
Yeah, he wasn't wrong, because the pick of the week is Ragnarok number one from Walter Simonson.
Rock on.
And IDW Publishing. This marks the first time we've had an IDW book as pick of the week in, oh, quite some time.
I can't think of what the last one would have been.
Now, I don't know anything about this other than I know I had heard of it. I think that I talked to him about this like a really long time ago.
It was announced last San Diego.
Yeah, and I thought, that sounds cool. And as I went through it, I mean, basically, I mean, this is, if you really liked his run on Thor, well, good news. This is like his run on Thor, exactly. Although Thor is not the main character, there is like a Thor. There's a reference to that. We spend time with not dark elves, but black elves. This skirts the edge of fair use.
Well, it's really interesting because, like, you know, Thor is, you know, is a prominent, yes, Marvel character, but also as part of mythologies in the public domain.
Yeah, and yes, and so,
but then if you have a celebrated storied run on a character like that, how do you navigate that without touching on things that you've already done, and like what stuff counts as like Marvel's, you know, yeah, Thor properties, and how do you
I've
suss
found
that
myself
out?
I found myself wondering questions like they said that, you know, they, but I think a lot of what it comes from is the, I was gonna say text, but that's not it, is, you know, like what the actual Norse myths are, and I think, you know, it's kind of fair game,
like
Sherlock
Adas,
Holmes comics.
Yeah
and so they didn't say dark elves, which I think is smart because they don't want to get sued because of movies. But
and Thor has a skull head now, and we don't really call him Thor.
No. Well, they name him in the beginning. Anyway, here's a little background on this. What you may not know is that Walter Simonson wrote and drew a very acclaimed run of Thor in the mid to late 80s. It's up until recently, it's probably the best run of Thor post Kirby up through Jason Aaron's run, I would say.
I'd say all time, and those other things come close.
Yeah. I mean, it's fairly – what I love about Walter Simonson, and we'll talk about the story in a second, but, you know, like, just him – I love that he's got this resurgence. He's got this, like all of a sudden, like, we've seen him do a lot of original work over the past handful of years, 3-4 years, and people like appreciate him. And what's even better than that was that the dude hasn't lost not an inch. He hasn't lost a step. He's, like – this stuff looks every bit as good as anything he's ever done. Mm-hmm. He's a master storyteller of sort of classic comic book action, and he's doing this kind of fantasy stuff. And it doesn't feel like, oh, it's just this guy going back to the well again. It's you know, put him up there and watch what he does. And to me, Simonson, who was a teacher for a long time, I mean, he was, you know, like teaching people how to draw comics and do cartooning. You know, he's this link between classic comics of the 60s and modern comics of today. Like, he's the guy standing right in the middle. Like, there's Kirby is all over this, but also it looks pretty much completely contemporary as far as I'm concerned. What was really cool is that on this, he was joined by Laura Martin doing colors. And sometimes Laura Martin, for my taste, overdoes things a little bit because of the period that she sort of came out of. But she was very tastefully restrained on this. There wasn't way too much sort of shading and stuff. It was a little bit flat. And then on letters, I guess it was John Workman, who did the letters for the classic Thor run. And they're awesome. They are.
That's why they looked so familiar.
Yeah. Gang's all here. Yep.
It was delightfully anachronistic. Like the word balloons were not perfect. Like, I was like,
There's like a tail going into the back of her head at one point.
It's,
I was like,
possible. It's possible that these were hand lettered, and I don't want to get too excited that could be a thing. But man, would that be the best? But somewhere cool. There are these pages, and they're actually hand lettered. It just makes me happy.
I will say that I was relieved that when the prologue ended, so too did the rune style lettering, because that's cool. But like, after a while, I was like, what? Because it's so
I had exactly the same thought.
There are a couple caption boxes. I still don't know what they say.
What? I'm a big nerd, and I, you know, I was like, ooh, John Workman's lettering it. You know, but then I was like, oh, okay, maybe he should not do it. But then it was fine.
It was totally fine. Cool. It's a prologue. It's cool.
What this story is, and I don't know Norse mythology well enough to tell you the nuances of it, but there's these two black elves, and they're both assassins, a lady and a man, and they've had a baby, and there's one more job to go do. and the lady leaves the baby home with the daddy, mm-hmm. and she goes off, and she's super badass.
Yep.
And she's got this job to do to kill this guy. And is it Thor? Like, she's supposed to kill Thor?
She's going to the Citadel where Thor is in chains. And Mjolnir, which isn't named, but the hammer is basically the sort of the latch on the door.
Yeah.
And also the security system. And so she's going after Thor, but I guess we don't know entirely what the mission is. But this is.
I don't think they ever name him Thor.
They mention him in the beginning.
Kind of they say Odin's son, don't they?
And yep, they do. And they say the stone god once, I think is what they call him. You know, it's just an adventure tale. You take off. There's stakes back at home. There's the baby. They're trying to get away. There's one last score. It's all pretty classic. You know, she gathers the team up.
That's sort of the cool thing is that we tiptoed around this. How do you do a Thor story that's not a Marvel Thor story?
Right.
And so we have, you know, Thor is like a skeletal looking. He's really badass looking. He's on the cover.
Yeah.
And he's in like all these chains. And it's sort of like a Frank Miller, like hyperbolic, like the worst prison you could possibly be in.
It's not all that different than an alien chain room. There could be a xenomorph in there. I would watch out. Exactly. Those chains are wet.
Simonson, right.
Yeah, I didn't even think of that. Oh my god!
Exactly. But the it would be the Simonson version of the alien before they actually came up with the Giger alien in the Archie Goodwin comic. So he just had to do whatever he thought the script looked like. Anyways, It takes place at the end of the world or after the end of the world. It's after, yeah. It's post Ragnarok. So there was this war that's laid out in the prologue, and Odin's dead, Thor's dead, everybody's dead, and it's just, you know, the bad people left. And so we're following basically who would normally be the villains, but they're our protagonists, at least for this issue.
And they're really sweet parents.
Yes, they are.
They're really great parents.
Yeah, I really like that. I'm going to tell you the moment that I was like, here's your pick of the week. And it's just totally a graphic design page. It's page, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, page 8. It's sort of blue. It's she's riding her horse from the distance into the foreground.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing is segmented into 5 horizontal panels that go across the page. Mm-hmm. But on the left side, there's a box that's used to sort of focus on her as she rides towards us, just so she gets getting closer.
Yeah.
I just think that is epically astonishing graphic storytelling.
Oh yeah, it's wonderful.
It's comic book and cinema all blended together, and it's classic Walt Simonson. And if you, it's just so good. Like it's like, and the whole thing is sort of like that. He's as good a storyteller as exists right now. And then on top of that, a lot of times if you have a guy come back from 20, 30, 40 years ago, their dialogue and stuff is not as snappy as some of what we've gotten used to. And it was not the case at all. Like, this was really fun, snappy dialogue that fit in the thing, but, you know, it didn't feel goofy. And I just loved it. I love that he straddles the line between, you know, between modern and classic, and it doesn't lose anything to either. And it's just so cool. I'm like proud. I'm like, look at him go, man. That's great.
It's like the next issue of Thor, you know?
Yeah, it totally is. Yeah. And you know, it's a first issue. They entered the danger, and then we see it, and then that's it. So we don't really know what's happened. It's not a complete story, but I'm totally excited to come back for another one. And seeing what happens with this. I'm very upset that something horrible is going to happen to the family of assassins with their baby.
Yeah, the stakes are pretty high, because I think the payment that she asked for is not actually monetary. She's asking for basically that her child won't ever be harmed, and then when the job is done, that her child will basically just live forever.
Yeah, if she
screws up,
right,
the child is basically sent to damnation.
Yeah, so it's either your kid's going to be immortal. Which I, by the way, I don't know if I want anybody brokering that for me.
Yeah. I like your reaction. Like, whoa, what?
Yeah. Well, that's what happens when you deal with the dark forces.
Fail me and I'll see to it that your daughter spends her eternity in torment. What?
Yeah. And then the thing is, so like if you root for her, like, well, then possibly Thor has to die.
Again.
But maybe
he's
this,
dead.
That's her mission.
Like, maybe this Thor is a dick.
He
could
looks
be.
Not nice.
The thing is,
he's a skeleton. Don't hold that against him.
There's a thing that they've been doing with Marvel Thor recently, and I bet, you know, this has been touched, but, you know, Thor may not be a good guy, depending on your point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, especially old Thor, Norse Thor. There's definitely a way to tell that story where he's, you know, he's not necessarily going to be sympathetic. You know, he's not for the little guy. You know, that's sort of what Marvel has turned him into. But, you know, this is a way to do that story, definitely. You know, if you're looking at it from the God Butcher's perspective, for example.
And this, as far as we can tell, this is an ongoing. This isn't one of something.
Yeah.
I looked around. No, I couldn't find a cap, so I don't know. But
yeah.
I feel like they never announced that, or you don't see that.
Yeah, they don't.
First issue.
Now they just assume everything is ongoing until it isn't, basically.
And then you get to issue 3, and it's like 3 of 8.
Yeah, right. Well, that can happen too. But it's kind of cool because you think you can live in this world for quite a while. And I want to see more of this giant dragon fight thing at the beginning.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, you know, he's written from all various ends of, you know, the Yggdrasil tree, like... Mm-hmm. He, you know, after this story, he could write something else that takes place in all of those realms. There's a lot of ground to cover, and, you know, a lot of different, you know, times. So
if you have been hankering for some good old fantasy comics, this is this would could easily pass under your radar, and it shouldn't. And also, if you're just a fan of really, really, really great comic book art, I cannot recommend it. Or lettering. I cannot recommend it more highly. If you're a fan of really great comic lettering.
If you love skeletons.
Or chains.
If you like reptilian-looking horse things. And lady assassins.
And trolls that are kind of like Gamorrean guards. That's yeah, they got that too. Norse architecture.
And thought bubbles.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I love thought bubbles.
I do.
There
like
were thought bubbles in this, and I was very excited.
It's really timeless.
Yeah. So it was thanks for pointing that out. There wasn't much doubt after I read it that this was going to be what it is, because what else is there like this right now? I love it when it gets to be changed up a little bit. However, if I wasn't going to do this, I definitely would have gone with Batman number 33 from Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo and the rest of their people. This was the finale of a crossover that started a long time ago. No, not a crossover. An ongoing story that started sometime in the 90s, I think. It's been a little while.
Well, since last time, I've been excited to find out who wins in the laser light techno dance contest inside the Sphinx, Riddler or Batman, because that was the big cliffhanger last time. The Batman goes inside the Sphinx, or the replica of the Sphinx, and there's all these laser lights, and I was like, what are you up to, Riddler? And unfortunately, it doesn't end with a dance-off. That's not how they decide things. It's, you know, it's the whole detective thing, because it's Batman and the Riddler, so you got to do it that way. But I really like this because of the sort of epilogue thing and the involvement of Alfred.
The epilogue, I mean, and we can get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Because let's wait, because that really was the thing that put me over the top, that mm-hmm. I would have been like, that I really liked it. But, you know, let's go back, like, I thought what you had here was, you know what's funny is, like, I made a joke that it's been around for a really long time. Since it came back after there was, like, the little delay in the middle,
yeah,
it's been pretty peppy. And it's always on time, but, like, it's been, like leading up through this sort of final half of it, I was really good. I didn't feel stretched out. It's been pretty exciting, and sort of the one issue ends, you want to know what happens next. It hasn't actually felt drawn out since it came back. But I like the structure of, you know, like, you've got to answer 12 riddles, and they start doing a couple, and I'm like, are they gonna really go through these? And I like the structure of how Bruce got around it, you know, and he gave him an answer that was supposed to be wrong, but really it was right. And it's really nice, meticulous planning, and it's the kind of writing I can't ever do. Like, I couldn't ever do that. That's much more well thought.
Like puzzle writing,
I'm terrible at that kind of thing. And like whenever I've never wanted to be a mystery writer of any kind, which is kind of, you know, like he's trying to solve for X, and you have to know what all the things are, and the one character has to be smarter, but you don't know why. And I'm always impressed by that. And I thought it was handled really well, and it wasn't like it was just on the edge of being too much, and he knew exactly when to back off.
I just love the, you know, the scope of this, and the whole controversy at the beginning was, we're going to write a modern answer to Batman Year One. And because so many things have changed in the new 52, and even since Batman Year One, that Batman Year One doesn't necessarily work as the origin story for this particular iteration of Batman. That's the talking point, really, is that, you know, they needed to come up with, you know, new solutions for that and set up the timeline a little bit, you know, better. And, you know, Catwoman is totally different and all that. So
is it that this does Batman Year One not exist in this timeline? Because then this would happen before that.
Well,
it's a new 52. So technically it should only be new 52 continuity.
That's
it's
bullshit, though.
But
overall, like, historically,
yes. I agree with it being.
I don't like operating in those circumstances.
No, I don't either. This is academic. But I was gonna say, if it does, like, it doesn't fit in this anymore.
Right.
Like the Batman who goes through this.
Yeah.
Actually, it doesn't. It couldn't work because him and Gordon have a relationship in this. So this is that.
This is the substitute for that.
Yeah, which is much bigger in scale and massive.
This thing, he's not trying to do.
No.
Batman Year One. He's trying to fill in that timeline with a tonally different story, with a completely, you know, visually different story, and just the scope of it is crazy. I mean, like, Batman Year One is a crime story, you know, and it really focuses on, you know, police corruption and stuff. And this is like a, I don't know, it's like a David Fincher blockbuster kind of thing. Like it's you know, it's just it's the city, you know.
It does set you up for a world in which, like, very quickly, immediately, everybody in Gotham understands and appreciates the Batman, or at least the idea of him, because they're not sure, you know, because they won't really know for sure any of the stuff that happened, but, you know, people would talk and things would get around or whatever, and it sets him up better than sort of, like, with one big announcement to the world, sort of more than, you know, like, it makes him a major figure quickly, I suppose. I really think one of the things that I noticed as I was going through this is that I think Capullo started off with a ton, almost like a, everyone loved it. It was a ton of detail and lots of stuff. But this is, at this point, I think partly out of necessity, but partly just because it's a maturing process. Like, I think Capullo stripped down a little bit as we go through this. And I think it's really nice. There's just less lines, less marks. And maybe that has to do with, you know, Danny Meekie inking it or whatever. But I like it. I'm a fan of it.
And the colors. So, like,
in this issue, and I don't know if it's because of all the laser dance party, but the coloring in this issue felt more alive than in any of the other issues, I thought.
I think particularly in this issue, but I think Zero Year overall, it's gone from just being kind of, they're introducing this kind of Michael Mann color scheme with the, you know, the bright purples on the gloves, of course, and then but just the there's sun in the sky, you know.
Yeah,
there's vegetation in Gotham. It's a very different look for Gotham, and some, you know, and I think some people are like, this doesn't look like a Batman book. That's why I think that's kind of cool that it looks completely different than anything else in the Batman catalog.
Both Batman and Riddler have matching gloves in this.
Yeah, that's a big thing.
Also, is Batman wearing short sleeves?
Yeah, he sort of got like a muscle shirt kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he got hurt, but I thought like if his uniform got just like hurt, destroyed. Mm-hmm. But no, it looks like that's intentional.
Well, he's got this sort of like Under Armour kind of.
He's taking us to the gun show. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's a very different Bruce. In Zero Year, it's not even a Batman Year One Bruce. When he got the crew cut, everything. That's kind of unlike, you know, for some people, I think it was like a bridge too far. I think I like that it's so different. But becoming the Batman that we know and love.
Yeah. Anyway, the what could have been two pages.
Oh,
that broke my heart.
Capra-esque. Yeah. So it's.
Oh,
it's,
God.
So yeah. Alfred is, you know, finds, you know, Bruce's former flame from college and brings her in, and, you know, we're going to reintroduce her to Bruce. And he goes through this memory, and we don't know that it's, you know, his, you know, imagination, but he imagines Bruce growing old and having children with this woman and being happy and turning to Alfred and saying, you know, thank you. And then, you know, he thinks better of it. That's never going to happen. And the great final lines that he's spoken for, I'm sorry.
And well, he hoped that one day he would go to that cafe and he would look up and he wouldn't just see Batman or Bruce there. He would see a family. I don't remember the lines because I only saw it once in the theater because it was horrible.
Pretty close.
I don't think that's what this Alfred sounds like. I don't indeed.
Yeah, definitely don't hear that Alfred in this Alfred. No. As much as I like that Alfred, I mean,
yeah, it's a fine Alfred. We get Alfred.
It's fine Alfred, but yeah. So that was, you know, it was very tight. I was like, wait a minute, like you can't do that, and then oh no, it's not real.
Yeah,
it's but it was a good, it's a wonderful life, or it could have been a wonderful life, but
yeah, he you know, like he does big stories and he finishes them pretty well, Scott Snyder. So. You know, this is like several times in a row, so you can kind of feel confident about going into it. When are you going to drop a ball, man? Can't have it. So I did not see the Avengers 100th anniversary issue coming, but I noticed it, and I saw All by James Stokoe, and I thought, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, I was. I've been very excited about this. So this month they've been doing every week a different special where Marvel imagines what it would be like to do a special on the 100th anniversary of Marvel. So 25 years from now, because we're celebrating the 75th anniversary of Marvel this year. So, or a 75th anniversary of Marvel, depending on where you start. But anyways, it's officially 75th anniversary. So they've had different teams, and I've read each of them.
They ran out of actual fake milestones, and they made up real fake milestones.
But I think it's a cool idea. it's a neat idea. And they did a Spider-Man issue that was like, what's the 100th anniversary special going to be like? And they're like, what if it's like the 8th issue of a maxi series? So it starts like in medias res, you know, with the Kingpin killing Eddie Brock and becoming Fat Venom or something. So, but anyways, this has been the best one so far. It's the one I've been most looking forward to. James Stocco, writer and artist on this one. You might know him from Orkstein or Wonton Soup, which just came out with a new collection. And I'm a huge, huge fan of his, and I really want more Orkstein. But until then, this is pretty great. And he doesn't just imagine, because the thing is, like in 25 years, if things continue to go the same way, like the character should still be the same. So his added thing is that he's like, what if it's 25 years later for the characters too? So they're not in publishing stasis, and you've got Rogue, who they hint gained immortality from Wolverine as his last gift to her. And that's sort of like a little tidbit, and it's explained away in a little editorial caption at the bottom of the panel. But then you've got Doctor Strange, and it's like the 17th incarnation of Doctor Strange. He's in a new body, and he's a dude with a
mohawk. I noticed they didn't put out a press release, but he's black.
Yeah, or he's at least, you know, a person of color. Like he's darker skinned.
In the future, we will all be a lovely
Soledad O'Brien's. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then who else? And then Beta Ray Bill is the new sort of Thor on the Avengers.
There's Beta Ray Bill in
There's
this?
There's Beta Ray Bill. I was like, Beta James Stocco, Beta Ray Bill, Rogue, and Doctor Strange. And Tony Stark's brain is in a tube running Avengers Tower. And
which
it's
is
like
in,
a big mecha Iron Man
Malaysia?
Thing. Yeah, and it's like it's the planet's been invaded by the Badoon. And reading the stuff at the beginning, Stocco is apparently like a huge Marvel nerd. Like, well, he's pulling some really interesting, obscure stuff out of there.
I think that's true, but I think that what's also cool about him, why he's a good, he's a good person for this, is that I don't feel like he's got a ton of, like, I know he doesn't have a ton of reverence for doing it their way. So he knows all that stuff, but he's still going to do, like, his version of his story. So it felt like, obviously it felt like him.
Oh, yeah, definitely. It's just, you know. But, like, there's stuff in there, like, he talks about the Badoon, like gender wars, and that's like a deep cut, knowing about the Badoon and how their society works. Like there's a civil war between the male and female, and they each have their own planet. Or else he could have just been diving into Wikipedia, but I thought that was an interesting thing to include. And then the Mole Man and the Moloids are the major antagonist in this. But what I love is that the Avengers fly around like on a pyramid, like a floating pyramid, but it's so impractical because
they call it a Quinjet.
They're each on a side of the pyramid. So like if someone was shooting at them, it would just hit them. Like they're not, I don't know if it's cloaked or whatever, but anyways, but it's just full of, you know, huge imagination, and it's got total stoner colors on it. It's pretty wonderful.
I was just thrilled when Mole Man the Third showed up with his little tie. He has a little sweater vest.
And I love that it's like in this, you know, this is giving it away. But so if you don't want to know how it ends, fast forward a bit. But they, you know, the Mole Man attacks them and they're fighting. And Doctor Strange's solution isn't to destroy them. It's to go to Yellowstone Park, which is now the Great American Ocean, because the ice caps and everything, and bring up, a bit of the tectonic plate so that they can have a new realm to live in, a new subterranean lair. So it's a peaceful solution to the problem and not just like all out, you know, warfare. And I thought that was kind of smart. So I love the hell out of this. This totally delivered on the promise of Stocco Avengers. And it's, I think it's kind of, you know, it's just this one shot. There's you know, probably never going to be, you know, more Stoko Avengers, but it's nice to dream.
Yeah, it was a good time. Now, as a person who is known on the internet as Wonder Alley, it seemed auspicious that we had you on the show today when a Wonder Woman issue came out. And we haven't really talked about it in a while, but also Cliff Chang came back on after what seemed like a bit of a hiatus.
Yes.
And I feel like we're, you know, we know there's another version of Wonder Woman coming up, and this is going to be wrapping up pretty soon, it feels like. And what do you think? Are you down with this?
I felt like this run had a little bit, it dragged a little in the middle, I think. Mm-hmm. I felt like it had a really, really, really long second act. But since Wonder Woman's become the God of War, which is the last couple months, it's like picked back up to that pace that it had before. And seeing Cliff Chang's penciled when I opened the page, or I opened the cover this time, was really exciting because his art just has an energy that can't really be mimicked.
Yeah.
So it was really great to see that. And I also love Matt Wilson's colors. So it was a gorgeous issue, and even knowing that there is a new creative team coming on in, I think, October, November, this has kind of felt like the beginning of the third act, which I think was good and necessary and needed. It'll be interesting.
When Orion showed up the first time, I thought, I don't like that. And now that he's back, really? I thought, I really like that. I had to be convinced. I'll just be honest. That's the thing. Like, I
was like, Orion, cool.
I know, but like, I'm, you know.
I was kind of like, Orion, cool. And I was like, oh, he's a massive dick.
No, but that's what makes it fun.
It is.
Like, it really, it's such a, I think as a sort of counterpoint to how Wonder Woman is in this, like, of course, they're fire and ice. They shouldn't mix, but they kind of do, and it's fun. And even if nothing comes of it, it's fun to sort of watch them, because you know, like, his heart's kind of in the right place. He's just a doofus,
right? Yeah, I kind of do like that. And it's not only Diana who calls him out on his douchey behavior; it's everyone. And in this episode or in this issue, it's Hera.
Yeah.
Which is great. She had a really fantastic scene.
I was thinking, I really liked the development of her character from the beginning, where she was just sort of the evil, jealous queen woman with a ton of power, to whatever she's become now. And then, like, you got what was basically a flash of her older self, and people, like, got scared of her. There was, like, a little sort of foreshadowing in one of those panels, because, you know, she's a god. She's unpredictable and you know, change direction, and I like that.
It is good too, and I'm glad that they kind of called it out as it's good to see, I haven't seen her like this in a long time, because you've really only seen her as this jilted wife character. She's probably had the most progression. She's really great. I love when she has interactions with Zola and the baby.
So I'm guessing that at the end of this is the end of this. Like, this is never going to happen. Like, the Wonder Woman is running around in the other books. She's not. But not really. Nominal.
Actually, out of San Diego Comic-Con, I believe today there was a quote about Wonder Woman's not going to be so much with the mythology. We're going to be looking at other stuff after this.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them.
Yeah.
Is fine. And I think it's good, because we've had
3 years.
I don't know. 3 years of crazy crime family mythology. But I love that we've had this, and I love that it's lasted this long, because this is, it's not a superhero book, and it's almost definitely not a Wonder Woman book. It's
the longest I've ever read a Wonder Woman arc. I can tell you that much.
Yeah.
I'm still with it the whole time, and it really, it's good at this point. It's not, I'm not just like, let's just end it. I'm excited for the ending, but not in that way.
Yeah. And I think it's going to come at its own pace, and it's going to wrap up, and I'm going to have 37, 38 amazing issues of Wonder Woman that I can come back to and force other people to read.
And we got Sensation Comics to look forward to.
And we do.
The digital first Wonder Woman series.
I think it's the first time that series has come out since the 50s.
Will there be an undercurrent of BDSM?
Probably not. Maybe. Who knows?
I'm sure.
I think there is an E.L. James issue coming up.
Okay, so that's what I want. Finally, we haven't talked about Saga in a while. And I don't know, has it been not out in a while, or is it just...
Well, there was a little hiatus, and then it came back. You might have been gone that week or something.
Maybe that was it.
Maybe that was
it. I think this is only the second issue since the last hiatus.
Right.
Christ, at the end of this one, I wanted to read the next one.
Yeah.
Oh, that's my point. I was like, wow, we really have not spent enough time with these robot weirdos, and I think we should spend more time with them.
That's the thing. It's such a challenge for Staples to have these characters that are, you know, it's not just one character who has a TV head.
Yeah.
It's a whole race of them, and they have to, you know, interact and emote in a way, or not emote. And only some of the time they use the, you know, the device of having something on screen that depicts kind of what they're thinking. But most of the time, it's just a gray screen. And that was really effective in this one when Prince Robot the Fourth finds out that he has a son and his wife is dead. And he shoots the madam in a sextillion when he finds out about this, and no one told him for a while, and just, you know, let him continue, you know,
spending money
into his perversion, yeah, and spending money and filling their coffers. But so he just gives them a blank look, and you know, it's so much more effective than if that was a character with a face, right? Traditional humanoid face. Excuse me for anyone who's offended by that. Sorry, for your TV heads out there.
I also really like the marriage.
Yes, I was.
That's real marriage stuff
for Marco and Alana.
For Marco and Alana, like, I couldn't think of Marco's name.
You already know they're doomed, and you're just sort of watching these cracks, and it's very real and very normal, and kind of hard to watch because you want them to succeed, but they've already told you they're not going to.
Right. It's great because you don't normally see this in comics. Anything.
Story, you don't see it,
or media in general, like,
yeah, but it's so universal that, you know, like getting into, you know, hallucinogenic drugs while you're in a telenovela, you know, wrestling drama, and your husband is kind of interested in the purple woman
but also trying to hide the species of his daughter,
right?
Or half of the species of his daughter.
Oh, is it the thing, like, do they have pink urine? Is that what's going on? And like, he's trying to hide that.
No, he doesn't want her to change her because her wings are strapped down.
Yep.
Okay.
And she'll see the wings.
But isn't she pink? Sure, isn't like the accident pink?
Maybe they all look like that. I don't know. Okay. It's orangey, isn't it? Yeah, it's orange.
Maybe in the future, it's like the things where they put in the pool. So if a kid pees, you see it.
Just what the air in that world does. You know, like it's hard. It's another good issue. And I marvel at Fiona Staples. Like her work is so good. And I want to say realistic, but that's not it. It's true feeling. Like the bodies look like real bodies, and it's like sexy, but it's grounded, but it's also aliens, and it's all these things at once. And, just nothing looks like that. And it's so perfect for this.
And she's doing everything, which is also like mind-boggling when you think about it.
Yeah. So I'm glad that they have the system where she takes a little break, gets caught up.
Yeah.
A fill-in artist on this? Like,
I don't even think you could get a fill-in letterer or a fill-in colorist. Like, it would completely change
it. It'd just be wrong, yeah. So.
So listen up. You're listening to this and you're thinking, geez, you know what? I wish that I had bought all these Saga issues, but I hadn't. You should get the to ifinbo.com/Amazon. That's going to take you to the Amazon.com superstore on the internet. And you can get the issues and the trades of this that you've missed so far. Because you want to be caught up, because this is epic stuff. You could also, you know, if something turned you on about the planet there with the robots, you know, I'm sure there's something for you there. Because they have a lot at the superstore. That's what I'm saying. And I'm not saying that's something that I looked for. It's not... I didn't try to find a hallucinogenic head tingler that sticks into my neck so I could fantasize about being on the beach with my family. I didn't do that. But if you were going to, you could go to Amazon. But the point of all this is that if you do that, then a portion of your payment to the gigantic mega conglomerate known as Amazon. It's not a conglomerate. The big, big corporation known as Amazon will go directly to us, and it doesn't cost you a thing. And if you're going to buy something anywhere and you dig all this, why not do that? Then you can also, if you want, be more direct, be more forthright, be less passive aggressive with your giving, and go to ifanboy.com/registration. You can just give us money. Cold, hard cash, biatch.
You and then none of that goes to Amazon.
None of it.
It all goes to...
You know what? I actually don't believe that. Sure, some of it does, in some way.
In some way.
In fact, as Connor is part of the corporation, I'm sure of it. Some of it will end up going to Amazon. that's you can either do a regular payment that we can expect of $3 a month or $30 a year, or just whatever it is you feel is cool. And that actually definitely really goes to fund some of the costs of doing the website and the podcasts. And of course, we thank very deeply all those who have done so. It's very generous and kind. So again, ifanboy.com/registration or ifanboy.com/Amazon. That'll get you to where you need.
Did you see Carol's new earrings?
You know,
we're going to have a conversation about that.
Because I know that Bill's not making that much.
Right.
You know what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
So, Allie, how good is Afterlife with Archie? The answer is so good.
It's so good. It's so good that I can't even really express how good. I started reading this last night, and I was about 3 pages in, and I wanted to find everybody who had read it because I needed to talk about it while I was reading it.
Yeah,
it just bowled me over how really good it was.
This is also a really good jumping on point. We should mention Afterlife with Archie number 6. Just to fill in the gaps a little bit, in the beginning, it all started when Jughead's dog got run over by a car, and he couldn't let go, so he had to, you know, go to Sabrina the Teenage Witch and be like, can you please resurrect my dog for me? And
like a good friend, she finds the Necronomicon.
And she sorceled him back to life, but of course he was a zombie, and he bit Jughead. And Jughead became a zombie and the whole thing. And now we're in this whole Walking Dead kind of situation in Riverdale. And when we last left our redheaded friend and Betty and Veronica and some more of the survivors, they were fleeing Lodge Mansion, Lodge Estate, and heading for higher ground. But now we have this interlude with Sabrina the Teenage Witch, and where has she been all this time? And she's been in this institution in therapy sessions with H.P. Lovecraft. Dr. Lovecraft. And this is a Lovecraftian, you know, this is a total love letter to Eldritch Horror and apparently Sakasa and Francavilla are huge Lovecraft fans. And I have been on record as saying I'm really tired of Lovecraft stuff in comics, but I think if you're going to do it, they did it really well and they know their stuff.
Yeah, they unabashedly went in and said, we're going to do a Lovecraft story.
Yeah, but they also they have an understanding of the material and the voice and the tone of it. And it's not just Cthulhu, you know, like it's not just about the tentacles. It's
right.
They clearly are fans of this stuff, and it's really good.
It's so good, and it is. It's just that like it creeps in with like the little tendril of a tentacle in the beginning, and so you know what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the pacing is perfect, and Francavilla is a beast with the art.
Yeah, and I like that this is sort of about, it's not just about, you know, tentacled horror. It's also, it's a psychological thing. It's like, am I crazy? And she starts, you know, thinking, maybe hallucinating that the people who are running this asylum are, you know, are monsters, and maybe she's more than right. And they end up wanting to make her the bride of Thulu and you know, as a witch, she's going to be, you know, part of this right, and the setting, like the way that Francavilla just draws it, it's very creepy, and It made me think of the last episode of True Detective, and they even mentioned Carcosa in here. So True Detective fans, you'll like this. But yeah, it's a great place to drop in if you want to check out the series.
And it's a perfect like one shot standalone story.
Yeah,
which I liked. I was nervous because everyone had been talking so much and said such great, wonderful things about the trade Afterlife with Archie.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm like, all right, well, Archie zombies, I'll figure it out. I was not expecting this to be Sabrina the Teenage Witch marrying Cthulhu.
Yeah. And I think we're going back to Archie next
month, yeah, but... and it very much looks like this is a one and done, and they'll be back in Riverdale.
Yeah, either it's a one and done, or like we'll get more Archie, and then it'll be the next, you know, end cap. You know, like we'll come back to Sabrina possibly, but
right. Well, I know they said, and there's a preview at the end of this issue that there's going to be a new Sabrina.
Oh, right, that's true. Yeah, she has a spinoff
series,
which looked good.
It looked good, and it's like period. It's going to be set in like the 50s or 60s, and it's creepy looking. And also, this issue had a Wicker Man reference, and I kind of love when you have a Wicker Man reference.
All right, this has been way too much Archie for 2 weeks.
It's good.
I get it. It's fine. They're having a resurgence.
So tell us about cool. Letter 44.
Yeah, you guys, you know what Letter 44 is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Charles Soule, fairly well known, I'd say, in mainstream comics at this point, is doing this series over at Oni. And I had read the first issue a while ago, and then I lost track of it. But I really, really liked the first issue, and I know that doesn't make sense, but there we are. I caught up because I was on airplanes a lot, and I read all of the issues, and I got current with this issue number 8 that's out this week. This is so good. That's all that I have to say, really. It's basically the story is that this guy, Blade, or Blades, I think that he said he was Latin, so maybe it's Blades. I'm not sure. He's the president. He's the 44th president, and he gets his letter from the 43rd president, who's George W. Bush, basically. And they found aliens, and they're preparing for something because they don't know what's happening, and they sent a spaceship out there. So you've got this story of the president and his new government trying to figure out what to do. At the same time, he's trying to be a good president. And then in space, the astronauts are out there next to it. And it is a page turner, and it is, I don't know how I am going to wait issue to issue going forward, because it's really, it's very exciting. There's a lot of really good personal stuff, and there's a lot of big stuff, and it's a really well done series.
That's cool. I gotta get caught up on it. When I read the first issue, the pleasant surprise for me was that they do focus on the astronauts and what's going on out there.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting that, but that's continuing on.
It's supremely well structured. Okay, I gotta say, like, that dude's impressive. He really is. It's a good book. And then also this week we had a first issue out from Warren Ellis and Image Comics.
Yeah. Supreme Blue Rose number one.
That is an odd title.
It is.
Supreme Blue Rose number one with art by Tula Lotte. I didn't love it.
Why are we talking about it? The art is really good.
It's significant. I will always give a new Warren Ellis book a chance, because the man has ideas and they're good.
I was slightly surprised that the Warren Ellis book that we were talking about was not Trees, number 3.
I don't have anything more to say about it that we hadn't already said before, I think.
Okay.
It was pretty good. It was interesting, but it's sort of like, well, I'll wait for a thing to happen before we talk about it again. But I don't know. I had to look it up again because I can't remember. Supreme Blue Rose is about this girl who is an investigative journalist, and non surprisingly, she's having trouble getting steady work in this world that does not value journalism, but it values lists of cats. And she gets an offer from a mysterious, very wealthy man of $300,000 to go search for the clue to a mystery that has to do with dimension hopping or some such, and all this sort of weird metaphysical stuff that's going on. And it's interesting, but I wasn't blown away.
Yeah, which is... I have to kind of read this one again. I just remember picking it up and seeing the title and the creator and being like, "What are you? What are you?" And then after I was done with it, I was like, "What were you?" but I loved the art though. I really did, and it's got that like off pitch printing kind of thing. Like it's it almost looks like, wait, am I reading a 3D book and I need to be wearing the lenticular glasses? No, okay, it's fine. It's just, you know, weird look. And I thought it was very pretty.
I'm going to keep reading it, but I wasn't blown away. I think we were blown away with trees. More so. But, you know, like it's smart science fiction, you know, at the end of the
trees
day.
Trees and ghost, moon knight. Ghost knight. Moon knight.
Oh, right.
Ghost
knight. Yeah,
exactly. Ghost knight, Jesus.
Talk to me about Storm number one.
Greg Pak. Continuing to write really good. I've sort of with this and with Action Comics, sort of discovering, and Superman, Batman, discovering this guy's really good at interior monologue. It seems
that's saying something in this world of too much interior monologue.
It seems to be
there is a lot of interior monologue.
It seems to be a connect. But did you not like it?
No, it's funny. I remember as I was reading like the first few pages, I was like, this is a lot of internal monologue, just like something that I thought of. Not that it wasn't good. Mm-hmm. There just seemed to be a lot of it.
There are definitely those weeks, and this is one of them where there's like so much going on and so much to read. You're like, oh God, look at all these words. But I thought, you know, what we're saying, and especially, you know, a great opportunity to really focus in on Storm as a character, get to do that interior monologue. We don't get to see that often because she's usually in an ensemble. So to get just a solo book from her is really cool. And
Mohawk? Mohawk?
Mohawk.
Yes, Mohawk.
That's a big thing.
It's Mohawk, Storm, or get the hell out.
Yeah, I don't love the art in this, but I like the writing, and it's interesting. It's sort of a one-off first issue. I think it's been involved in Morlocks in issue two. That seems to be the indication. But like this is like a very self-contained thing, which I thought was an interesting choice for the number one. But yeah, I think it's off to a promising start. And I like his characterization. I like Beast being sort of like back at base and saying, Storm, what are you up to? Where are you going? Stop causing problems with human relations. Don't blow anything up, please. You know, we're trying to, you know, establish good relations with this country. Please be nice. And so I kind of like that she's sort of, you know,
a bit more.
She's a wild card. That's a good word for it. Yeah.
Cool. Now, Paul, I asked you if you were reading Velvet.
Right.
And you said you went to trade
because a little bit. I'm a loser, little bit. Right.
Yeah. A little bit. This was a really good issue to get you back up to speed with what's happening.
It looks like
there was some well done sort of exposition that sort of placed us where we were and sort of brought me back into focus about where this story is, this British 70s spy story that it may well be one of my favorite things on the stands. This is so good looking. It's just so good looking. It's just so cool and sexy and dark and this one, you know, it hasn't been bad at all for me, but this definitely helped sort of shore things up. And I was like, oh, that's great. That's good stuff. Ending up as one of my favorite books in the stands because it's just so cool.
My thing is just not that I don't like it. It's just that it's spy stuff. And mm-hmm. I have trouble keeping track of everything that's going on. And I have similar problems with Zero sometimes, but Zero gets away with it because it's sort of like a different thing every month.
Yeah, you don't need to hold on to anything, really. Well, interesting, because Zero number 9 was out this week. I feel like this has been away for a little bit. I haven't heard it. This art by Tanji Zonzik this time, who I'm a big, big fan of.
Real nice.
Yeah, real nice. And it's funny, because the thing that Connor got mad about when there was an alien thing, they haven't even gone back to that at all, so I'm just ignoring
that. Yeah,
that's
true.
This one, all I want to say, this broke my heart at the end. It was really
rough.
Yeah, and if you look at how it was drawn, there's these huge brushy ink splotches. Mm. Like it's just super expressionistic comic book art. It's like Lone Wolf and Cub. It's nuts. Really good stuff. really. I thought it was a really good issue.
It makes Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy look like the Banana Splits in terms of tone. Like, yeah. It's, man, it is dark. Very dark, and it should be. It's very dark.
The hell out of me.
Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy?
Yep, yep. I was like, I think this might be really good, but I want to go to sleep.
The most tense scene with Benedict Cumberbatch trying to get a file out of a library.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I enjoy that, but it's, yeah.
So those are the books from this week. We talk a lot, so we're going to move along quickly and try to do an audience question or two while we still have time. Brian from Atlanta writes in, first question, between commissions, prints, and a page or two of original comic art, I've finally run out of wall space, and the missus has put her foot down on expanding out of my office. She doesn't want to see that shit. I'd like to show – that was my word. I'd like to show the work off, but I'm out of ideas and walls. Any suggestions?
Say do what Ron does.
Does he hoard it with the dragon?
No, every convention he's got that folio of like he can flip through it. Like it's sort of like what the artists have at their tables where you can look at their original art. He has like a book of that. So you could, you know, get like maybe like a lectern or something, or like, you know, put it on a table, like a coffee table book.
I've been to his apartment. I don't think there's a lectern. I guess it could have been in the other room.
Well, he's saying he wants to show it off. So I'm saying, you know.
To who? Do you have people coming over who appreciate that? Because I've got a lot of original art, and as yet, nobody has come over into my life and been like, oh, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Or if they did, they still didn't know what it was. But that's sort of a me problem.
I'll let you go, but I have one more recommendation after that.
Yeah. No, I want to know what your recommendation is, because you actually have a lot of art.
I do have a lot of art, and that is a problem I have. And so the thing that I do, I still need to get a lot of stuff framed, but rotate it. You know,
yeah, that's kind of where I ended up.
You know, you have some stuff up for, you know, a month or two, and then, you know, you're used to it. Take it down, put something else up.
The thing is, you don't do that. That's like when you rearrange music on your iPhone. Like I've still got my playlist 2012 on there. I'm like, I really got to fix that sometime, because you just don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but I have the same problem. Like, I have some pages that I bought that are really good, and I only have so much space to put them in, and I don't want to buy any more of these super fancy frames because they're expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have pages that I like. I have pages that have been drawn of stuff I've written, you know, that I want to put up, and sketches, and I just don't have room for all of it. So it tends to sit there.
Decoupage a bureau. Don't do that. It would involve cutting them up. Don't do that. Ceiling? I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? It's
I think especially for prints, it's easier to just get a book for them. Yeah. Or if there's an artist you like, buy their sketchbook. Mm-hmm. And then you get a whole bunch of basically prints that you would buy.
Right.
And they're bound in a book that you put on your bookshelf.
Yeah. You know, it sounds like your wife does not appreciate the same kind of stuff you do. And you're going to have to come up with a compromise, because that's what marriage is.
There's only so much Xenoscope that a woman can stand.
Yeah. I've definitely, you know, what's funny is like, I've got this space since I moved out of the office that I had into the sharing my office, because my baby took it, and I haven't finished putting my stuff up on the walls because I couldn't decide what I wanted to. And I need to put a few more things. So I have this amazing Gabe Hardman Wedge Antilles that I don't have a spot for.
Oh yeah. 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 That's,
and I need a spot for that. And I have these pages that are like, I've got like one spot for pages that have been drawn of my scripts that I want to have up, and there's like enough of them now. Yes, I know no one's ever read any of this, and I'm sorry. There's enough of them that I those are the ones I want to rotate.
Yeah,
because they're cool. Like, I've got some great stuff that way. I don't know, man. It's the challenge. Don't buy too much. not the greatest advice. Slow it down. You want to do one more?
Okay.
Let's do one more.
Allie, you want to read it?
Oh, okay. Yes, sure. Of course. I have it very handy.
People are sick of
listening to two of us. it's from Will in Norwalk, California, mm-hmm. who says, I wanted to know if any of your favorite characters had enough time from saving the world to do a podcast, what would they be and what would their subject be? Personally, I would love to hear Silver Age Arrow versus Green Lantern politics podcast. Or J. Jonah Jameson doing a Rush Limbaugh kind of thing. For laughs, of course. I think J. Jonah Jameson would have like a serious Rush Limbaugh podcast. I don't think he would be doing that for laughs.
I think he's not saying that for his laughs. He's saying for his, it doesn't matter. I think he'd be like a Joe Scarborough kind of guy. like, you know, sort of very serious and wants, you know, the thing, but a little bit wacky. It's a good question. I don't know that I can beat I don't know if there's anything that I'm picturing an Ollie Queen, Hal Jordan argument that, like, sounds old. Like, you can hear the tape hiss, and I was that sounds awesome.
It's like old reel-to-reel tape kind
of
stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. These are not the kinds of questions that I do really well at, but I thought that I would go for one. I would like, I think, a podcast with Clint Barton and his exes would be great. That's what I want to hear, and I want at least three of the women who he is sleeping or has slept with to discuss things with him. It's like he does his therapy.
It would basically
recorded.
An extended version of that one issue.
Yep, that's what I want. I want to hear that as he tries to figure out what's wrong and then realizes it's him. That would be best.
Wildcat. You know, talking about doing a boxing podcast.
the Jennifer.
And it's like old fighters come in and talks to them, and
does he sound like
really bad? Yeah, and he's like really bad at questions. Angela.
I would go with Stephanie Brown and Supergirl having a podcast about monster movies, one issue of Batgirl,
the Draculas. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
She-Hulk's legal advice.
Yes,
I would like for that to be out there. I would not listen to it personally because I'd find it very boring and dry.
No, but you would make it good, and then people would attack during it. I bet that like the Steve Rogers World War II Memorial Hour would be really dry. Ooh. I don't know. We were just out there trying to do our jobs. Come on,
fireside chat, Steve Rogers.
That would be great. Yeah. So there you go.
Talkie Tawny podcast.
Talkie Tawny's Tiger Talk.
Talkie Tawny's Tiger Talk.
That I want to hear. I don't hear that a lot. I want to hear like the Black Adam Radio Hour.
What does Talkie Tawny sound like?
Tom Caters.
Is his voice?
I assume he's like British and effete. Really? But I don't know why. Yeah. Oh. Like
Sebastian Cabot or something.
Well, no, like the Apes in Planet of the Apes, the first one.
Dr. Zaius.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like he's got, then you would hear the teacup hitting the saucer frequently. I don't know. He's refined, isn't he? Does he have like a bow tie?
That's our show. That's our winner.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Talkie Tawny Tiger Talk.
If you would like to be part of these kinds of conversations for some reason, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. You can leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697. Make sure to tell us who you are, where you're from, and if you're calling in, keep it to less than 30 seconds, or, you know, 40 if you need to. We're saying don't be a rambler. If you can keep us interested for that long, go nuts, man. That's what I'm saying. But call in. We need some more of your voicemails. That's what I'm saying right now. What's coming up?
Next week, very exciting Guardians of the Galaxy special edition podcast. I don't know who's going to be on it yet. I will be. Hopefully Josh will be.
I will be. I made the point of saying, guys, when that I want to do that.
I think Connor will be on a schooner. But we'll have people here. We'll be talking about Guardians of the Galaxy. I'm so excited about this movie, guys. Getting really good advanced buzz.
You're really setting yourself up for...
No, it's getting really great reviews.
You know, Bradley Cooper is one of the main characters, right?
Stop it. Stop it. Just stop it. So you can head over to ifanboy.com. You can comment on this show. You can talk about this week's books. Find all of our other podcasts there.
As a sort of test, I played the trailer for my wife.
Yeah.
Who's even more out of it than I am in terms of what's coming out. And I was like, what do you think of this? Because she's only ever seen what's his name on Parks and Recreation. So I was like,
Chris Pratt.
What do you think of this? And she was like, that looks really good. I was like, interesting.
Even though there's a raccoon with Bradley Cooper's voice.
Well, she's my wife. So it's not, you know, it's not like she's not used to these kinds of things. She's hardly a lay person is what I'm getting at. But but she was, you know, this, you know, I couldn't get her to watch Captain America to save my life, but I didn't really want to.
Doesn't everybody know Chris Pratt from Everwood?
Kind of, yeah.
This is breakout role.
No,
Parks
and Rec. I also remember him from the OC a little bit.
I was an article in Esquire.
Is he on the OC?
Not.
Yeah.
Like a bit. It didn't matter. There's an article in Esquire not long ago, and it was trying, like, the thesis was that Will Ferrell is not funny and that Chris Farrell is the new comedy everyman, or Chris Pratt.
Chris Pratt is, okay.
Yeah, and it was a dumb article, but that's what I always think of when I...
I'm really mad Will Ferrell's going to do that Manimal movie. I wanted to do Manimal or something. It was like my secret in the background kind of goal was this, like, amass my fortune and buy the rights to Manimal and do something serious with it, like audio dramas.
Well, they remake things a lot. And it's not like Will Ferrell hasn't had his share of franchise-based flops. So, you know. You could. There's a good chance.
Tainting the legacy of Manimal.
Yeah. Tell that to the land of the lost.
Legacy. Yeah.
Yeah. You and a bunch of other guys who were fixated on crap from the 70s. Anyway, where do they go, Paul?
You can follow the action on twitter.com/ifanboy and facebook.com/ifanboy to find out what the pick of the week is before the show. You can follow us all individually on Twitter. Josh Flanagan is J.A. Flanagan. C.S. Kilpatrick, Fuzzy Typewriter, or Wonder Alley.
Yeah, and if you wanted to, you could go to ifanboy.com, which would be where all this stuff is.
I did that already.
Did you do that?
Yeah.
You know what? I'll tell you something. It's hot, and I'm tired, and I'm jet-lagged, and I'm dumb. Above all, I'm very dumb. I've been lost on trains. I've left luggage in places.
You did. I got a text about it. And finally, if you dig us, you can write us a review on iTunes. Better yet, you can tell your friends about us. Introduce your mom to podcast. Help us spread that iFanboy love all around. All around the world.
So there you go. Thank you for listening. Thank you for coming on, Allie. Was
really
that
hot?
Thank you for letting me in the treehouse.
We appreciate you bringing yourself to that.
Thank you,
and
Allie.
And always getting back up when you fall down. Master.
I'm so glad I got to hear Josh do Michael Caine live.
Done it in a while. Pretty worried.
And that is it for this week's show. Thank you for listening. I am Paul.
I'm Allie.
16. Yes.
Josh might be dead.
16. Yes. Oh.
Goodbye, everybody.
Bloody 16. Yes. Oh.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also like, one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.